Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 101 of the Crick Picks podcast on Combox TV, where the game lives on. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. With me is Jared Kimber, as always, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And we have a debutant today on Crick Picks, our latest colleague, Deepak Goyal from The First Umpire. Deepak, are you nervous? Are you happy? How do you feel?
To be honest, I'm not even sure, like, it's even if it's my debut or because we did that top 10 players. I'm not sure whether that gets counted as Crick Picks or not. So if...
No, it does not. That was not Crick Picks. That was kind of a cousin of Crick Picks. I can tell you that Deepak has already said that this is too hard. He sent a message yesterday going, can we make this easier? And I said, no. This is what Crick Picks is. Right answers, and this is the end of your life.
Yeah, I was terrified to kind of miss out on a few hundreds. So that's the only reason.
Yeah, well, you will.
Guess what? You will.
Yeah, you will definitely miss out on hundreds, but we'll give you an opportunity to, talk about honorary mentions. And of course, for those of you who are new to this, and Deepak, I suppose you can learn from this as well. What we do on Crick Picks is we take any generic cricket category and we draft our top five each for that category in a snake-style draft competition. And that basically means that the pick order goes 1-2-3, 3-2-1. And some of you must have gotten the spoiler already, or you would have read the title. We are going to be drafting the greatest ODI hundreds of all time. And we did test hundreds last time with Estelle. Now we've brought Deepak on for ODI hundreds. Unfortunate for him, though, that he hasn't bagged first pick. He's actually third. So you'll get back-to-back picks eventually. Jared, you have the honor of picking the best ODI 100 of all time.
Do you remember? I'm pretty sure we did a video on this. It was at that stage, it was a hard thing to do because this innings had just been played. But when I went back and did my research, I was like, I still think this is probably the best innings in ODI cricket that's ever existed. So I'm just going to stick with the one on the video, which is Glenn Maxwell 201 not out.
Yeah,
I don't know. Is that automatic for everyone? Did you all have that as number one?
My number.
Oh, I had it
as number two.
I had it at number one. It was automatic for me as well because I remember when we were watching that game, Jared. We were kind of preparing for a show or something that this game's going to be over soon, and then Maxwell just went ahead and did that right, and he scores an unbeaten 201 off one leg. Essentially, he's cramping all the way through. And it was just 128 balls, right? So the strike rate was insane. Australia were 4 for 49 when Maxi came out to bat. And then they were reduced to 7 down for 91. And they chased down, 292, 293? Something like that?
It was ridiculous. It really was a ridiculous chase. So it'd be interesting to see what Deepak's number one is now then. But I just thought for me, there's another innings I absolutely love. I think because it was in a World Cup and because Australia was under pressure and they'd had a poor start to the tournament and a poor start to that game. And then you had Pat Cummins blocking at the other end. I'm not sure we've ever seen another ODI innings exactly like this before.
Yeah. And I think he was close to 100 or had just crossed 100 when he starts to cramp. He doubles up after that and he remains not out, wins the game, unbeaten on 201 off 128. It really was bizarre when we witnessed it. And let's not forget, Jared, that Afghanistan really needed that victory. They were kind of banking on winning that game. And their kind of campaign got derailed thereon. So it was amazing. And
they had another game after that with South Africa. And it could have been a completely different tournament for them. They could have been in top four also. Mm. Like, they're pretty close.
Yeah.
And Maxwell 100 is number two on my list. So it's in top my list.
I was in 100%. It's funny because Behram was like, he was automatic. I don't know if I was automatic. I was like, it's probably this innings, but I'm not 100% sure.
I was actually happy that I don't have first pick because I thought it would be automatic, right? And I was like, this is a very vanilla pick because everyone's going to go for it. But clearly, only I was thinking along those lines. And Jared, you were confused between two separate hundreds. But I do feel that this is the correct first pick. Of course, everyone who's watching this or listening in will have their opinions as well. All right, then. Time for my first pick. I'm not going to go for a World Cup 100. I'm going with Herschel Gibbs versus Australia in, what was it? The Wanderers? Yes, Wanderers. Johannesburg. Yes. 175 off 111. And the special bit is that prior to this 100, Australia had amassed 434 runs for the loss of 4 wickets in 50 overs. That was the highest score ever scored in an ODI. And South Africa just went on and chased that total down, setting a new record for the highest total in ODIs. It was insane. I watched the entire game. I remember Roger Telemarcus getting smashed in the first innings. And then Herschel Gibbs comes out and does that. It was pure magic. And I feel like he really set things up. Other people contributed, but Gibbs scoring 175 off 111 and taking Australia's bowlers down, who, by the way, weren't all too bad. I know Mick Lewis gets, you know, slandered all the time, and Jared's never a fan of that. But you look at Stuart Clarke, who was really, really good in those days. Nathan Bracken took a fifer in this game, and Binga was there. Brett Lee was also bowling. So it was a pretty tough attack. I know that Joburg generally does have batting-friendly conditions, and it's a tiny ground, the Wanderers. But you still can't take away from Gibbs that he basically gives us an ODI that we'll never forget.
Yeah, I didn't even have it on my list.
Yeah, he's on number 13 for me. Number 13 for me. Because, like, to be honest...
Because
like,
you could have fucking made 100 on that wicket,
Bayram.
Yeah, because,
like, Steve's... like, to be honest, even Graham Smith scored 90-odd in, like, 50 balls or something. Like, he was going nuts in that innings. Ricky Ponting also scored a brilliant 100 in first innings, if I remember correctly. So, that's why. It's on 13th on my list, but not in my top 10.
Wow. So, my top...
Yeah, I just thought... Yeah, wait, just before you get there, I just thought that I think that game on its own is one of the most interesting games in the history of cricket. And I'm sure one day I'll go back and do a proper deep dive into it. But I just felt like if you were batting second in that innings and you were good and you stayed in for any period of time, you were going to end up with incredible numbers. Because once they'd seen what Australia had done on that surface, it was like, "This something's going on in the air tonight. We're just going to go for it." I just feel that you don't get it as... I think there's a lot more interesting innings to come. Anyway, Deepak, we finally get to his number one because his number one hasn't come yet.
Before he goes there, I would just like to, I'd like to double down on my pick because I do think there's an unprecedented element of chasing down a record total. So I'll stick with it.
Yeah, I give that. Yeah. But it was a weird wicket.
Yeah. Okay. So mine is, again, like Kapil Dev's 175 not out. Like for me, the biggest 100 ever in Indian history changed Indian cricket. And... they were like, what, 17 for 4 when he walked in? And
And they lost, didn't they lose the fifth wicket as well? Like they were still, even they lost another wicket after he came in as well, didn't they?
So I think they were like,
Were they 70 for 5?
75 for 7.
Yeah.
They were 75 for 7. Well, like, when like, I think Ravi Shastri also got out and I think 75 for 7. And then Madan Lal and Kapil, they came together. They stretched it to 140 for 8, and then they had that insane ninth wicket partnership with Kirmani, like 126 runs partnership, and it was a world record at that time. And considering the fact that even Zimbabwe had a pretty decent bowling attack, they gave Australia the run for their money in that tournament. And like Sam Curran's father, I think, was the main chief.
Kevin Curran,
he was the main chief destroyer in that innings also. And considering the fact the stakes were pretty high, India was pretty much on the verge of getting eliminated from that World Cup. And that particular innings changed the course of Indian cricket big time. So, like, it gave them the power to basically then kind of bring that stuff to ACC. And a lot of stuff then started shifting to subcontinent post this inning. So, that's the reason I've picked it as my best among all.
Well, I think it is undoubtedly the greatest ODI 100 never to be televised. That we can all agree on.
Yeah.
Because no one has seen the footage. We've only seen scorecards. But then again, when we think of Kapil Dev, we always think of that unbeaten 175 versus Zimbabwe. So I do think that it would have gone eventually, if not right now.
Yeah, I had it a little bit lower. I think there's some other incredible innings that maybe aren't quite as high. It is good. It is worth saying that I think when you look at it, because it's in the early 80s and it's against Zimbabwe, you don't think it's a very good bowling attack. But Kevin Curran, Ian Butcher, Duncan Fletcher and John Tricos all could bowl. John Tricos had, I think, it squeezed Australia earlier in the tournament well. But I feel like there's an element of, like, once you got on top of that kind of team, they weren't very experienced, right? Like, this was really early on in their cricket. And so... that would be my only question. I think Rod Marsh doesn't do anything like Kapil Dev, but I think the game where Australia win, Rod Marsh does something where once he gets on a roll, they don't, you know, they were very good. I suppose that Zimbabwe team is very much like a better version of what we see with Namibia sometimes, where everyone knows their roles, they have a little bit of talent there and they all play the part. But the minute you break that hold... yeah, I think then they have a lot of trouble, like, you know, reading through the lines of that team. Put it this way, it's not Rashid Khan that they were going up against, which, like, Maxwell was.
But, like, to be honest, like, by the time Kapil Dev walked in, the damage was already done. So that's the only reason why I have put this up as my best pick ever. And also the kind of history attached to it, the kind of impact that it
had. The history is interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
I just, no. I did a lot of, I've done a lot of research on this. I don't know if you've ever seen my feature on it and everything. I can't rate it higher than Maxwell's. Hmm. And I rate it really high, Kapil Dev. I just can't rate it higher than Maxwell's. I think Maxwell did it against a far better attack.
No doubt about it.
We were very experienced. And we used to, the big difference between the two is that that Afghanistan attack, we're used to bowling to people who slogged them.
Hmm.
What happened to Zimbabwe had never happened to anyone before, right? Like it's, so once he got on top, there wasn't much that could, that
like,
could happen there.
Jared, I have a different perspective on this. Like 1984, this brilliant innings of Viv Richards comes up. I'm not going to even discuss that. That kind of innings gave a template how you can actually play ODI cricket with the tail. So I'm not even sure whether in that era, in 83, like I don't have that much of data, whether it was a thing to even bat out with the tail. So even like at 75...
No, I think if what he does is very similar to... what Kapil does is very similar to what Ian Botham did 2 years before at Headingley, right?
Yeah,
so that's the difference. I think if you... That's why I have the other innings that you just mentioned slightly higher than Kapil Dev's is... I think there is... It's a bit more... And it's a bit like the Harmanpreet innings, right, as well. Whereas I think those are... A player got on a roll and couldn't be stopped, which I think is different to what you see with Maxwell because Maxwell's body fell apart and that team should have known how to slow him down or get him out. And also, Maxwell was so dominant that the player at the other end just stops batting.
Exactly.
Right?
I do agree that, you know, for me as well, Maxwell's 100 ranks above Kapil's. But I will give Deepak this, that India also lost wickets in clusters. They were under the pump. It was a World Cup game. Mm-hmm. Kapil was the captain. And for him and for Indian cricket, that was quite unprecedented, even if Beefy Botham had done something prior. So it does hold also, a lot of value, for sure.
No, 100%. 100%. So I just think it was slightly different. But it wasn't that far away. Anyway, Deepak's got to go again now. I don't know. Does he know that?
Yes. So my another pick is Arvinda's 107 in the 1996 World Cup Finals. Because of the history, because of the... A lot of reasons. It's not easy to beat Australia in World Cup Finals, to be honest. Like, in knockouts, the kind of thing they did to West Indies in Mohali... And I've seen that match live, that Mohali match. Like West Indies was just cruising along, and that's why I kind of no doubt Dew came in on that day, and like Sri Lanka was pretty much aware of it. The Dew would come in, and because they were on the ground even on the match eve also and all, but still, considering the fact that Australia in that era and for good 10 years even after that also knew how to win big matches, so that's why. And Sri Lanka was almost non-existent on that front. So that's why I rate that innings pretty high. So
it's, of course, a World Cup final, so we cannot sidestep that. I wanted to pick this up next as well, but there was one caveat in my head. And there are going to be caveats overall. For the Gibbs 100, you came up with Wanderers being a small ground and good batting track. You could also argue that Maxwell gets dropped a fair few times in his knock, right? For the Kapil one, there's the element of Zimbabwe not being good enough. For Aravinda at the Gaddafi, there is Dew available, which he has made use of. So I feel like we have to kind of take that or factor that in as well. But then again, it's Australia, Sri Lanka in a World Cup final out of nowhere. And it is technically a home World Cup for them. And they go on to create history.
Also, they were 23 for 2.
Yes.
Right?
Both the openers are gone.
Yeah. And Australia had an incredible new ball bowling lineup in McGrath and Fleming. And Rifle was still bowling later on. And they had so many bowling
options. And they had won also.
Yeah. Well, they had Warne, but they also had both Wars bowl in that game. Yes.
Yeah.
And Michael Bevan. That was the period where Michael Bevan was bowling quite well, right? So they had so much bowling in that game. And I had it about fifth, I think, on my list.
So it was third on my list. So not bad, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was my
so next I just thought it was when I was thinking of the best hundreds, it was one of the first that came to my mind.
Yeah, same. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories about it as well. I mean, I'm born in 94, so I wasn't there to witness it. But my brother was at the game. He actually had tickets to the final. So he was at the Gaddafi and he was also mesmerized. And I feel like that 107 not out by Aravinda is synonymous with his entire career. It's the first thing you think of when you think of him.
Exactly. I think the semi-final innings might have been better.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Pitch was
he doesn't make 100 though, does he?
66 of 40-something balls, I guess.
Yep. That, I mean, that's an incredible, that knock was just insane. No doubt. And just, India had no idea what was happening to them when that was going on. At least Australia knew, because Australia had the previous game to be like, oh, okay. You know, I love that. Also love the fact that Aravinda hated Australian cricket, and so he always played his best cricket against them. The more they talked to him, the more he dominated.
Same with even the captain, I would say, because he kind of...
Yeah, but he was kind of good against everyone, wasn't he? Whereas Aravinda could just fade out of entire series and not show any interest, and then suddenly he'd be like, play Australia, and he'd be like, oh, it's a knockout game, I'm going to make 100.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a lot of stories, Deepak, you can breathe a big sigh of relief now. You're done with your first two picks. It is only going to get more random from here on, and I've got my second pick coming up. But before that, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Crick Picks with Jared Bayram and Deepak, and we will be back very shortly, so go nowhere.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Crick Picks. You guys are with Jared Bayram and Deepak, and we are currently attempting to draft the greatest ODI hundreds of all time. I've got my next pick up, and I take it, Deepak, I know we've only known each other for a very short period, but I think you're a very passionate Indian cricket fan. Correct me if I'm wrong. You are? And so I will give you a trigger warning. If you want to close your ears right about now, you can do that, because I am going for Travis Head. Yeah.
It's number six on my list.
2023 ODI World Cup Final. India are not only invincible, they haven't even had a close game up until then. They literally look destined to lift that ODI World Cup at home once again after 12 years. And not only have they been unbeaten, they were dominant throughout. Here in the final, they've kind of been, you know, bowled out for 240. And out comes Travis Head. You think that they might have a shot because they've got a really, really elite bowling attack. You've got the likes of Jasprit Bumrah and Mohammad Shami, coupled with Kuldeep Siraj and Jadeja. That is world class, right, when it comes to bowling attacks. And Travis Head does what he always does. He has a penchant for going big in big finals. He did that to India, in the ICC World Test Championship final as well. And kind of doubles down over here. 137 of 120 balls, and it was an absolute spectacle. It was also a full house in the biggest stadium in the world. I think across all sport, if I'm not wrong, the Narendra Modi Stadium in Ahmedabad might be the biggest stadium, you know, we have globally. And
There might be a couple of football stadiums that are slightly bigger, aren't there?
Yes,
perhaps.
Couple of football
in South America, yeah.
Easily the biggest cricket stadium, and packed with Indian supporters who are waiting for their team to lift the World Cup, and Travis Head comes and spoils the party. And yeah, I feel like just because of the magnitude of that 100 and the fact that it comes versus a team which were the best team in the competition, even if Australia won the cup, I think that definitely counts for something.
So it was number 6 on my list. Jared?
I didn't have it as the highest ranked 100 by an Australian versus India in a World Cup final.
Okay, I know where you're going with that, because you were at the game, weren't you? You were in the stadium in 2003, Jared.
Well, I commentated on one game and I was at the other one. I lived both of the moments. I thought Travis Head was incredible, but I thought India just completely screwed up in the batting. I think they got themselves stuck. They allowed Australia to bowl to them with really smart plans by the Australians. There was always a chance that Australia got away against the new ball, because that was the thing. No one was surviving the new ball against India, right, in that tournament, especially under lights. I think they allowed themselves to be in that position by the way they batted in the first innings.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the other innings ended the game on its own. That was the only difference between those two. But yeah, I still had Travis Head pretty high up. Yeah. Just under Aravinda.
I would argue that Head's 100 comes versus a better bowling attack when it comes to facing India. But then again, I see your point about the game already being kind of lost in the first innings. So there is that. And of course, there's a lot of pressure as well. Like, India are also playing in front of a home crowd, in front of a packed audience in the biggest stadium in the world. So yes, but it's just that thing with Travis Head that he turns up whenever the stakes are high. He was player of the match in both the semi and the final in that ODI World Cup. And
which
Australia,
is extraordinary. Yeah. They and Aravinda did the same, right? Aravinda was exactly the same.
Yeah. Aravinda at least had the crowd on his side. The entire Gaddafi was supporting, Gaddafi crowd. I shouldn't say. Say entire Gaddafi. But yeah, the crowd was supporting.
The Gaddafi family was supporting Sri Lankan cricket that day.
Doesn't get any
better.
We're
positive that that is the case.
Yeah.
So Travis at 100 was number 6 on my list. Still pretty high, I would say. Because, again, like, this was the reason I kind of started a little lower, because I just felt that India had lost that match in first inning itself. So fair. It was pretty evident that if the dew would come in, it would be just a belter of a wickets, and this is exactly what happened. So no doubt 47 for 3 maybe adds to a little bit of optics as far as the innings is concerned, but like the top 5 that I had, I think due to that, it's on my number 6.
It is true, though, when Spudger goes out, everyone's thinking, oh, Australia are going to bottle it from here, but then Travis Head just had other plans.
Yeah.
Okay, Jared.
No, that's a good one. I'm going to go the opposite direction. I'm going to pick an Indian against Australia in a knockout game, and I'm going to go Harmanpreet Kaur.
All right.
71, was it? Was it 171?
171.
Yeah, I think it's the innings that changed women's cricket forever. Fun story, which I'm sure I've told before. It was the day that Crickinfo planned to change their website. And they changed their website completely. So usually they just do little bits. But this was like a structural overhaul of the website. Because I think they looked at it and went, oh, okay, it's a Women's World Cup semifinal. Nothing will happen. And of course, it ends up being maybe one of the most important days in cricket history. To be fair, no one had penciled in. It was in Derby. And I remember like walking out of that ground and there were all these English boys like talking about like wanting to be like Harmanpreet and like we're imitating some of our shots. And I was like, something has changed in cricket because I don't remember having seen anything like that before. It was one of the tiniest innings. I mean, we didn't see Kapil Dev's, but we saw Glenn Maxwell's. I think when you're going that hard, there is like, I remember being, they've got a little press box in Derby. And I remember just like I was looking out to the left at deep mid wicket and thinking to myself, eventually, surely she's just going to hole out. And she just seemed to put the ball left of deep mid wicket, right of deep mid wicket, over deep mid wicket's head over and over again. And I remember Matthew Mott and Meg Lanning in the press conference afterwards. I don't know if I've ever seen two people with less answers as to what had just happened than they did. Like, they were just like, she just played a good innings. We don't know what to say. And it was extraordinary. And then I think within about a year, I was back at that ground and Shahid Afridi made his only T20 100 and I happened to be there as well. So I somehow have been to Derby 5 times in my life and have seen 2 of the weirdest historical things. But for that moment, it's not just everything else. It also probably is the reason that Australia went on a tear afterwards, right? So it makes Australia better and it changes women's cricket forever. Like, that isn't quite the same as like what happened with Kapil's innings, right? Yes. With Kapil's innings, West Indies never won again. They didn't regroup, right? Mm. Even though they should have won another World Cup after that. They never did. Whereas, you know, with Australia, they're just like, now we're going to get better. And at the same time, there's a whole generation of cricketers now who grew up watching that, who now play for India themselves, and that's the ultimate side of it.
So yeah, I mean, it is definitely.
So where was it on your list, original list?
It is, second on my list.
Okay, so you got your first 2 picks, right? It wasn't even on my list because every time we do these, I forget that we are not, going for one gender.
You forget that women exist. Is that what you're saying, Bayram?
I am not painting a good picture over here, am I? It's a terrible look on me.
I think there's 3 really interesting ODI women's innings. I don't know if they all make it to this, but I think there are 3 fascinating ones that I thought deserved to be on the long list. But this one just, no. I think the impact it is going to have, and also the impact it had at the time, the ratings went through the roof, right? And, I still, to this day, get people quoting the article I wrote about her from that game back to me, right? And I've written a lot of pieces on Virat Kohli and Travis Head and, you know, Sachin Tendulkar and Sehwag or whatever. And people just remember that because it was a moment where women's cricket went from almost invisible outside of maybe Australia and England to very visible.
Exactly.
I mean, it is probably like before this ODI World Cup that India have won, you know, I think this is also an inflection point, but Harmanpreet's 100, you could argue, is an inflection point in a different way, in the way the sport is played. Yeah. Whereas now, this ODI World Cup that we've just witnessed, which India have won, is more to do with eyeballs. But the game evolves after the Harmanpreet innings. And the name gets coined, right? The Harmonster. We didn't have that before this 100.
Yes. And that's why
that was my piece.
My fourth on the list.
I just said people quote the piece back to me, and you just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay. Totally agree on this. And so, Behram, your pick now?
I'm again.
It's you.
I've got
you in a row.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Pick
I go
six,
back. This is the other one. I think I think the Harmanpreet one, I basically had three where I wasn't sure if they should be where they should be in this, but it's already been mentioned by Deepak already. It's the Viv Richards 189 innings. I don't know if you know much about this, Behram, of what the situation is, but England were... West Indies were 43 for three at that, and I think when he came in, it might have been a wicket in the first or second over, and then then Greenwich went out, and then Richie Richardson went out. The second top scorer in this innings is Eldon Baptiste, who makes 26, and Viv Richards makes 189 out of 272 runs.
That's insane.
It's not an all-star England bowling lineup, but it does have Willis and Botham, right? And even guys like Jeff Miller and Derek Pringle would go on to play a lot of ODI cricket over the time. But what's more remarkable is that when I say there was only one score over 26 in the West Indies score, which was Viv Richards' score. There's actually only one other score of over 26 in the game. Alan Lamb makes 75 because England get bowled out for 168.
Wow.
This was a wicket that was not meant for anyone to score 189 runs on. And Viv Richards just did not care. And it's one of those ones of, I think it really, his legacy was already completely in the bag by this stage. And this is just the cherry on the top of everyone just realizing he was playing a different sport to anyone else. And it wasn't slogging. It's just incredible.
Yes, I've seen the highlights of this innings and it's on number 7 on my list. So number 7.
I mean, just I wonder what is, Jared, we should get Varun to check the match factor of Viv just in this game. Like, how better was he with respect to the percentage of the other batters who featured in the same game? But that is remarkable. I've known about this stun, but not to that detail. Like, you've kind of painted the full picture for me. And I feel that it's a sure shot pick then. There are no arguments whatsoever.
And considering that this record stayed there for more than a decade, could never be matched. Yep. Like,
I remember my dad was never a big Viv Richards fan. And he loved everyone else. But I remember my dad being really sad. Was it Gary Kirsten that went past it?
No.
Was it Syed Anwar?
Syed Anwar, 194.
So Syed Anwar
Gary
went
Kirsten
past
was
it.
188 not out against Holland.
So that's right. So in that game, I remember my dad being really upset that Gary Kirsten was going to go past that record. As I said, my dad wasn't even like a big Viv guy, but he was just like, no. Like, you being Gary Kirsten... And beating this record is against Holland is ridiculous. This record goes down. It has to be someone like playing a real team, playing an incredible innings. And, you know, that comes back to the whole, what's his name? The number 3 from South Africa recently and declaring before making...
Riaan Mulder.
Riaan Mulder. I don't know why I forgot his name. But, you know, I guess some people do feel that way. I don't feel that kind of way, but I do think that... There's something really awesome about the fact that for about a decade, no one even got close to Viv Richards, right? And the first person who did had to do it against Holland.
Yes.
Yeah,
more than a decade, yeah.
All right, then. That means that it's back to me. I'm glad you've taken a few off the list over here. I didn't know where to place this 100, but you've gone with the West Indians, so I will as well. 1975 ODI World Cup final. Let's go with Clive Supercat Lloyd. 102 of 85 came into bat when the West Indies were 3 down for 50 runs versus Australia in a bowling attack which did consist of Dennis Lilly, Gary Gilmore, Jeff Thompson, and I don't know if the other guys were good or not, but there's Max Walker, Greg Chappell's known more for batting, and then Doug Walter's known more for drinking beer.
I mean, I mean, Max Walker was a proper player too, so there's four really good bowling options. And to be fair, Greg Chappell has a ridiculous record with the ball that no one ever remembers when we're talking about him.
Match, if I remember correctly.
Did he?
Dougie Walters gets a fifer. Fifer 48.
He took Gilmore a fifer in this fifer. World Cup, maybe. I remember.
Yeah, he took wickets. Yeah. And Dougie Walters was probably in any other team would have been Australia's fifth bowler, and he was the sixth bowler. So it's a ridiculous attack.
This 100 was eighth on my list.
Okay. Look, I've only known of this 100 through good areas because we're like super nerdy over here. And when I came across it, I was like, okay, the year is 1975 and he scored 102 off 85. This is not normal.
Yes.
Right? This is way ahead of, you know, its time and a proper time traveler knock by Clive Lloyd. And of course, he's a really cool dude as well. And he's the captain, right?
And that was before the beast era of West Indies because this was the innings that kind of triggered Australia and then they butchered West Indies when they went 2 down under. Like, this was the innings that kind of instigated that.
Australia was the better team.
Yeah, you see. They just lost by 15 runs.
You look at this team, look at the West Indies. Clive Lloyd had to bowl in this game. Right? That's how bad their side was. Like, they didn't have it. They had Van Bernholder, Bernard Julian, and Keith Boyce as their main. So the only one of the bowlers that we know is Andy Roberts, right? True. The only reason they win this game is because Clive Lloyd just puts it completely out of their touching, right? Yeah. He just completely changes that game. And if look at him, there's someone else who makes a 50 in this game for the West Indies. I don't know if you guys have the scorecard in front of you. Do you have it?
No, yes. I don't know.
Rohan Kanhai.
Okay, who is it? Rohan Kanhai, what's his strike rate?
His strike rate is 52.38. He scored 55 of 105 balls. And I was looking at the scorecard, right, whilst I was doing my research or whatever little research I did, clearly. And I had just remembered this 100 from back when I discovered it. I thought to myself back then that this has got to be one of the greatest knocks in ODI cricket of all time because he's the captain, the West Indian captain. Mm. It's not as good a team as what the West Indies kind of became to be, the juggernaut that is eventually assembled. And Kanhai's 50 is a lot slower. And like you said, Australia win by what? Oh, sorry, Australia lose by 15 runs. So they come super, super, or 17 runs, sorry. West Indies win by 17
runs. They were massively in this game, the Australians, right up until the end.
There's two runouts.
Yeah. There's like two or three runouts. I think it might be Max Walker who could bat a bit, was run out. And if he'd stayed in, they would have got pretty close. But they wouldn't have ever chased it because it was too high a total. You've got to remember that there was a couple of really high totals in this tournament, one of which was England, of course, when Sunil Gavaskar decided not to chase it. But this wasn't like scoring 291. I know it was a 60 over game, not a 50 over game, but scoring 291 in a final was like, we didn't even know what ODI cricket was. Mm. And Clive Lloyd literally comes out and shows Australia what it was. And they just didn't have the ability. Ian Chappell, I'm just looking at it now. He makes 62 off 93 balls. That was the sort of innings that you saw in those mid-70s, late-70s sort of thing. And Clive Lloyd's literally smashing 100 off 80. Again, though, as we said with Aravinda before, in this case, still not the most important or still not the best innings that a West Indian played in a winning final because Colas King plays a better innings in the 79 final, but unfortunately doesn't make the 100.
True. But anyway, we talk about inflection points and I suppose that this win does a lot for West Indian cricket.
Yes.
It literally like transforms them.
It changed
them.
Their entire
Clive Lloyd becomes a global superstar as well, right? Like, I feel that, you know, this had to be high up over there. And he is the difference. If Australia they've scored 274 and that's what they've gotten all out for, then literally Clive Lloyd's impact innings is the difference. And that's why it ranks number 3 for me. And before you go for your 2 back-to-back picks, Deepak, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Cricket Picks with Behram, Jared and Deepak, and we will be back very shortly, so go nowhere.
I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I have been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Welcome back to Cricket Picks. You guys are with Jared, Behram and Deepak and we are currently drafting the greatest ODI 100s of all time. We're back to Deepak for back-to-back picks and let's see what he has in store for us.
For me, like, first, I would like to go with Steve Waugh's 120 not out in Headingley versus South Africa. So, because it's just, again, it was one of the inflection points for the Australian cricket and for the world cricket, because that completely changed the way Australia dominated world cricket post that, because they went on to win the finals pretty comfortably, and then they just became the beast for good one decade. So that's why, because if that would not have happened, I'm very sure Australia would have been kicked out of that World Cup. And in all likelihood, I think Pakistan-South Africa final would have happened, and it would have been a
complete... They were the two best teams.
Yeah, they were the two best teams in that World Cup. Australia was like third best team in that World Cup. I'm not really sure on that also, to be honest. Like, so that ways, I think it changed Australian cricket, changed world cricket, changed everything we saw in the next 10 years. So that's why I've kept that as one of my hot picks. And then post that, since all of them have been taken, next would be Syed Anwar's 194, because it had such a massive impact on me as a kid. It traumatized me for ages. Like, it's like, because he was, that innings was so ahead of its time in the term, because I think he got out in like 45 or 46 over. And I think Sachin got him out, if I remember correctly. He was sweeping him, got a top edge, and then Ganguly took a very beautiful catch. Or it was the other way around. It was something like that. And Anwar was running. I was having a runner at that time. And the way he took down Kumble in that innings, it was not a very, I would say, a belter kind of a pitch. It was a little tacky, and that innings were ahead of its time. So just imagine that record also stood there for a good 13 years before Sachin took it down in 2010. Mm-hmm. And Sachin batted till the 50th over in that match, even though there's a different circumstances altogether. So that's why for me, that will be my next pick. Like my number nine for me was this.
All right. Well, technically, Charles Coventry did overtake him, because Charles Coventry was not out.
194
not out. I hear what you're saying. Look, I wasn't old enough.
I had Anwar's 100 ahead of Steve Waugh's, by the way.
You had Anwar's?
Because again, I just think it was... Yeah, because I think also Anwar doesn't get the credit he deserves for basically almost pioneering the attacking opening batting. But also, that was... I know he doesn't make the double 100, but again, I just think that was an inning so far ahead of its time. Whereas I think Steve Waugh's innings is actually old ODI batting, right?
It's just the context it's more of the match.
The context of the match is incredible. It's a test innings, really, in ODI cricket. Whereas I think Anwar's is, for me, just at a different level. But if you look at the bowling attacks of the two, like, I think they had Venkatesh Prasad, Kumble, Sunil Joshi, Kuruvilla, I think, was bowling in that one.
Javakul Srinath was nursing a shoulder injury at that time, so he was not there. And Anwar had a thing against him. So, and yes, South African attack was little better. They had Pollock.
It was a little bit better, but it's not like it's an attack that if you go back, you realize why they don't win as many World Cups as they should. Because if they just picked their best five bowlers, South Africa, all the time, they probably would have. It was Pollock and Donald. But it was also Elworthy, Klusner, Cronje, and Bowyer, right? Like, I know Klusner had a really good tournament. I don't think he bowled well that day from memory. But Hansi Cronje and Nicky Bowyer bowled a lot of balls to Steve Waugh in that. And I just think that they had two... They had basically... Klusner should have been the fifth bowler. And then you had... But you actually had Cronje and Bowyer trying to be the fifth bowler. And also, by having Elworthy in that side... sorry, Steve. now the head of Surrey. But if they had one more like proper big swinging dick bowler, it would have been incredible. But at the same stage, as you said, they were so far behind in that game. Like they really did. And usually the person who would have saved them would have been Bevan, and he doesn't. When he goes out, I think as an Australian fan, most of us went, oh, that's done. Because Steve Waugh is not one of the best ODI batters of all time. Right?
Exactly.
And I mean, Australia problem solving throughout that ODI World Cup. Steve Waugh is the captain. They are on the brink of elimination. I think it does hold a lot of context. So I can see how or why Deepak went with Steve Waugh ahead of Syed Anwar. But Syed Anwar scores his 100 at Chepauk, right? Is it?
Yes.
So it was, those are definitely tougher batting conditions.
MH Dhamram Stadium only. Yes. That's what I said. It was a tacky wicket. It was not. Like Dravid also scored 107 in the second innings. But under dew, like it becomes a little difficult track altogether. I clearly remember Akib Javed got Sachin for four with a beautiful outswinger or something of that sort. Like, but it was... And
it was not a wicket. I think that's why I like that. Yeah, it's not a wicket you should make 194. And that too, you like, know what I mean? And I think that's the thing that blew my mind about that inning.
He had hit Kumble for four consecutive sixes. I've never seen that happen to Kumble. And that too on a surface like... And again, Chepak has a very long straight boundaries. And he was on a different... that inning traumatized me for years. Like, for years. Because it was always...
Well, I'm glad we could bring that up, if nothing else. Yeah. If the whole idea of Crick Picks is to be traumatized. And so far, your picks have been okay. So you haven't been traumatized over your actual picks. So I'm glad it is just over your childhood.
Yeah. No, I think it's a pretty solid start to your life on Crick Picks.
That's because he spent like a week looking into this.
No, so I just spent half an hour, to be honest. I'll be honest on this because ODI 100...
He didn't spend half an hour. You spent half an hour... panicking over it with
like,
me on,
ODI
on WhatsApp.
ODI 100s are something which are like embedded in my head. I have like, this is the format I've lived on. Like,
yeah.
So that's why.
Hmm. Oh, well then you're the perfect candidate to, you know, be on this episode. I'm confused, guys. It's my pick up next and there are 200s. One of them is another ahead of its time sort of 100. And, you know, it changes cricket, this, that, the other. And the other one has come in a World Cup final. So I'm really confused. I think Jared will pick the ahead of its time 100 eventually. So I will pick the World Cup final one then. Let's go Ricky Ponting versus India in 2003, Johannesburg. 140 unbeaten of 121 deliveries. Again, this was an Indian team which had impressed everyone throughout the tournament. They were the ones who actually looked like they could beat Australia in theory because Australia were also rampant in this tournament. And Sourav Ganguly's finest hour perhaps as captain for me, is the 2003 World Cup as opposed to the NatWest Trophy win. Even though he doesn't end up with a title over here, I feel like he really changes Indian cricket in the sense that he makes them believe that, okay, you guys can win, you can compete and you can be arrogant a bit, you know? Like, it kind of changes the mindset of Indian cricket, his captaincy. And I feel like this was that sort of culmination point where it could have all, you know, come to a full circle sort of moment. But Ricky Ponting was Australia's captain and he had other plans. Of course, Australia were also really, really strong at this in this period. And I remember watching that final. I was a kid, quite young. And when Australia lose those two wickets, we for a second do think that, okay, maybe India can come back over here. But Ricky Ponting was just completely relentless and he just wouldn't take, you know, any other word. It was quite a spectacle. And for the longest time, you know, this was the Australian 100 versus Indiana final that people would talk about. It's just now that people probably will remember Head more because of recency bias.
It was an incredible innings. It really was. It was the Indian fans. I remember walking into the stadium. They were so confident and they were like, we're going to win this. And I was thinking, well, you're not because McGrath's going to take a bunch of wickets.
Exactly.
So, I had no confidence in the batting lineup. I think Australia had won two games because Michael Bevan in the tail. Right.
And so won by Andy Bickle. Andy Bickle won them the game versus England.
Andy Bickle and Brett Lee.
So
yeah. So there was a couple of games where where Bevan just batted with random people. And so we had traveled around that World Cup and we were like, we were expecting
even
Australia
against Pakistan,
to bat
to be honest. They had a horrible start, like where
even against Kenya. Yeah. Why are you saying Pakistan? Against Kenya they got themselves in trouble.
Andrew Simons took down Pakistan on his own, right? Otherwise Pakistan were going great versus Australia.
Exactly. And so it had been a really weird tournament. And so when we were batting first, that wasn't real. You know, we were like, okay, they'll get to about 220, 230, 240. And then McGrath will come out and that will be enough. Because that's just, we just trained ourselves to believe that at that stage. And then halfway through that innings, we were like, it doesn't matter if McGrath plays in this game. There is no way India can score this amount of runs.
And to be honest,
they've just completely crushed them.
For me, it's not even in my top 15 because the reason is I honestly believe that openers had done it for them because they had like 80 for something, I think, at the end of 10 overs. I just thought that India...
Gilchrist did, but Hayden was not batting well at all.
I just felt,
go back and have a look.
But to be honest, like I have seen that match live because I clearly remember. It is, again, one of the memories. Because I personally felt after 10 overs, the match was done. Because India in that tournament got bundled out for 125 against Australia. Yeah. And they had a real tough time dealing with Australia in that era. So after 10 overs, when Ricky came in, I thought that match is done by then. So even if...
No, so generally, I think in that era, this is not the 2007 team, right? Where they would just keep going. This was a team that would pull back. And I thought what would happen is they would probably get to 270, 280 and give India a chance on a decent wicket to be able to, right? They made 360, right? Like they went so far beyond what I thought was possible at the ground watching the conditions, you know, and we really hadn't seen a World Cup final like that before, yeah. right? Where one team just goes, sorry, I don't know why you turned up.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Even the Clive Lloyd one, even the Clive Lloyd one where you're like, they probably scored 25 to 30 runs more, like going back watching the game, but not, you know, Australia still had a chance, right? Whereas with this one, I was like, I could have gone, that Brad Hogg could have left, come and swap seats with me, and I still thought Australia were a chance of winning.
Exactly.
It was so many runs.
That's the whole reason yeah. why I've not been able to rate it in my 15, because to be honest, like from for the first over itself felt like India was under the pump, because Zahir Khan gave away like what, 16 runs in that opening over, and he was all over the place. Yeah. He was not even able to bowl straight in that over, like pretty contrary to yeah. what he did in 2011. And I just felt that, because like India won the toss, should have batted first on that surface. Yeah. They defend defensive. I just felt that they're mentally done for that match. And once they had that opening start where they were like 80 odd for none or what, I just felt that match was done and dusted by then only. So
I think the technical, go back and watch it again, right? If you haven't watched it, the technical excellence that Ponting has in that inning.
Yeah, that way.
Like for instance, every time he tries to hit a boundary, he hits a six. Right? It's incredible. Go back. I think he hits more sixes than fours.
Yes.
If you
talk about and the technical genius, I totally agree on that.
But to do that in a World Cup final, Deepak, when usually you're scrambling for any run you can get, and they were so on top of India. They ran between wickets incredibly. Damien Martin had a broken hand, by the way. Do you remember? He could barely hit a boundary.
Yeah, but like,
he had a broken hand. He couldn't sign autographs after the game because his hand was so mangled.
At one point
that was
of time,
excuse.
India had rejected to the fact so much that Dinesh Mongia was bowling for them, if I remember correctly. So,
so Dinesh Mongia actually bowled 7 overs in this game. Ponting unbeaten on 140 of 121. Jared is correct. 4 fours and 8 sixes.
It's like every time he decided to do something, whether it was find a two, defend a good ball or whatever, it was off the middle of his bat.
Jared,
so much so that people thought that his bat was cheating.
Totally remember the spring incident.
And that he had a spring in it.
Do you even remember the number of full tosses India bowled in last 10 overs or so? Like, this was not one of the best bowling performances from India, because they were
but you're looking at it from that perspective. I'm looking at it from the perspective of he broke them. What was left to do?
True.
Damien Martin and him, it's a shame we don't have bat sensors or anything. I'm not sure I've ever seen two players just middle the ball as consistently
as they did, that was traumatized.
For me, even if this wasn't a World Cup final, it was probably one of the best technical innings I've ever seen.
That means, yes.
The fact that he did that in a World Cup final is, I think, just, it takes it to another level.
So for me, it was, to be honest, another Australian final 100 after this is also not in my 15, but that innings is slightly higher than this Ponting's innings.
Well, I was a really young cricket fan, and this is kind of around the time where I've gotten or become a really avid cricket fan, right? And I'm hopeful that, we've got Waseem Waqar and Shoaib in Pakistan. They can do something in this World Cup, and that doesn't happen at all. It completely falls through. And then I am just mesmerized by Australia thereon. I was also a big fan of that Indian team. But, you know, some of my favorite Australian players were playing in this team, like Adam Gilchrist. Damien Martin was a favorite of mine as well. But Ponting wasn't that guy for me, right? Brett Lee was that guy.
Maybe I have a little bias here because I had not given India any chance in that one. I was just praying, hoping against hope.
How old were you when this all happened?
I was 18, 17, 17 years old.
Okay, so I was 9, all right? And I had never seen anything like this. And I know that, you know, I'm too young to comprehend that we've never seen anything like this in a World Cup final, that one team has scored 359. But I think that that whole element of Ponting just absolutely breaking India, I think that does count for something. So
I was like, it had to be near a miracle to beat this Australian side. It was like, they just knew how to win from weird situations, to be honest. Like, so
also, if my memory serves me correct, there was a chance of rain. And, you know, everyone was hopeful that, in India, you know, the fans were like, if it rains, maybe we get a replay tomorrow.
Yes.
So that didn't happen either.
I clearly remember that when India came out to bat. And Ganguly and Sachin were already out by that time. So when this all thing happened. That's why I said, maybe, because I just felt that Australia was so ahead of the curve at that time. Maybe that. But if you talk about the technical aspect of it, yes, I think, because I have not seen that innings in the last 22 years. So again, I'm like talking from my pure memory. So it's almost 23 years now, I would say. So Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, I've got one pick left, as has... No, Jared has two to go, right?
I've got two now, yeah, don't
back
I?
To
yeah.
Back. But before you go there, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Quick Picks with Jared Biram and Deepak, and go nowhere because we will be back very, very shortly.
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Welcome back to Crick Picks. You are with Jared Biram and Deepak, and we are currently drafting the greatest ODI hundreds of all time. Jared has his last two picks back to back. I did leave 100 out there for you. It would really piss me off if you don't pick it.
I'm not sure what you've left me. You said that before, and I didn't know exactly what you meant by that.
Okay.
I've got a bit of an idea on one, but that you might have had, but I think there's one that we've all slept on. Hmm. And I think the reason we've slept on it is because of the player, not because of the impact. But Kevin O'Brien.
Nice. All right. One. Good one.
So it's Tinaswamy. I've done an entire podcast where I haven't talked to Kevin about it, actually. But I've talked to his brother, and I've talked to Ed Joyce and Gary Wilson about this. I've talked to the England players about this. Like, one day I'll do a proper thing where I get everyone to sit down for 5 minutes and take us through. But there's so many incredible things about this. One of them is that an associate team in those days, when you scored over 300, wouldn't even try and chase it, right? And I think that's something that Niall was talking about. And the thing of generally what would happen is the team would get over 300, and you'd be like, okay, so how do we get to 260? So we don't get flogged, and we have a little bit of pride from this, and then on top of that, they were what? Gary Wilson goes out. Gary Wilson was not happy, by the way, that I, everything I interviewed Gary Wilson about at one stage was like games he failed in. But Gary Wilson goes out and they're 111 for five after 24 overs. Yes. They're not close on economy or strike rate. Mm. And they've lost their vaunted top order, which is where all the strength comes from. And I think the other thing is people have forgot what the bowling attack was. Shall I name you the bowling attack from England? Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, Tim Brisbane, Michael Yardie, Graham Swan, and Paul Collingwood. Mm. That's a ridiculously strong attack if Paul Collingwood is your sixth bowler, right? Like, it's mind-blowing that that is the attack that happened. And they had given up Ireland. They thought it was completely over. And there's a great story that I think Niall might have told me, which is that KP was injured. And so did he make runs in the first innings? I can't remember if he made any. But he made a 50-odd and he got injured. And so he couldn't field. So he was on the balcony at Bengaluru, at Chinnaswamy. And the balconies are really close. And he's just screaming. Right at England, and it doesn't matter what is said. It's just literally like Kevin O'Brien's just like bang, bang, and just smashing it. It really is one of the more remarkable innings I think that has ever been played in our game, and it essentially changes the future of cricket again.
Exactly,
right? It opens up a test status for them in a way that probably would not have happened otherwise. And to chase over 300 as an associate team when you're five down for 111 in the 25th over is so mind-blowing to me.
Exactly. And it's at 50 ball 100, I guess?
Something like that.
Yeah, what does he end up with? He ends up with 113 from 63 balls. I mean, what?
100 happened in 50 balls, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for quite a long time, I feel, or not quite a long time, but for a few editions, it remained the fastest World Cup 100 ever.
Yeah,
and I mean, I feel like, you know, the whole Irish journey is amazing. 2007, they knock Pakistan over, and then they're back in 2011. People are talking about 2007, and now they pulled this off versus England, which was remarkable, right? And I think that we did sleep on this, Jared. So good that you picked it.
So I've got one last one to pick. And I'm wondering if the innings that you're talking about is when a 16-year-old who might have been 21 comes out to bat. Mm-hmm. I also have, there's a couple from a New Zealand player in a World Cup that I can't split. So I don't know if I'm ranking them a little bit lower than they deserve to be. But I would go with Shahid Afridi in Kenya. Was it Nairobi?
Yeah, it was Nairobi.
Yeah.
So it was...
Because... It still doesn't make sense now, that 100.
Yeah.
Even like made the sense other day, then, and it doesn't make sense now.
Ishan Kishan scored what? Scored 42 ball 100. And Saurabh in the group chat texted that I still can't believe that this was insane. And Shahid Afridi in 1996 scored an ODI 100 off 37 deliveries.
37 balls. It was just outside my 15. So just outside, because I've not seen that match live. I read about that innings from this magazine called Sports Star. So all I saw was like, if I remember correctly, Jayasurya went for like near 100 runs in that match. And Muralidharan was also bashed. But I've not seen the visuals of that match ever. Like, I don't know why.
It's worth having a look at them, because I looked at them a few years ago. And I've said this before, but I'm really happy with this joke, so I'm going to use it again. When he comes out to bat, it says on the screen that he's 21 years old. And by the end of the innings, he's scored so quickly that he shed 5 years off his age. And he's ended up being...
I think Anwar was with him on the other end. He also scored 100, if I remember correctly, in that innings, right?
Yeah. I just think that, I think the most important thing for that particular innings is that we had, as Bayram said before, we didn't see anything like it again, right? Since like ages. It was a complete solo outlier. And it's like, people are like, oh, he's playing in Nairobi. And you know, it's just like, yeah, people were doing stuff like that all the time. No one else was scoring 37 ball hundreds, right? And it's, you know, I think the fact that he goes on to be the player that he is, you know, adds to this.
That was
legend.
His second ODI like also, I guess, at that time.
Yes. And probably his first batting innings, right?
I was going to say, was it the first time he batted in a game? I would have been.
And he wasn't even in the squad as a batter, right? They saw something
in
the Nets.
He was in West Indies, I guess.
The new.
He was in West Indies at that time. He was flown in or something or that sort. He was not even having his
bat
with him.
Waz left this series midway and he told the other captain, whoever, you know, took over that, you know, you might as well take a punt with this kid and maybe send him up early. And the supposed wrist spinner, the Mushtaq Ahmed replacement, went and slammed a 37 ball 100.
And you know, he played with Sachin Tendulkar's bat in that match. Like, Waqar gave him that bat. Yes.
So I did Waqar not know that.
Yes. So Waqar gave him the bat, Sachin Tendulkar's bat, and he played with that bat. So I've covered this in one of my podcasts, so that's why I remember. So he played...
Also, like, they made 371.
Yes. Yeah. And even that's Sri Lanka scored 300 score. Plus, I guess, in this match.
No, Sri Lanka made 289, right? Like, Sri Lanka weren't even close. Yes. So,
and Anwar also scored 100, if I remember correctly, so...
Yeah, Anwar, Syed Anwar makes 115 of 120 balls. Yes. So... You know, but no one else, it wasn't like everyone else, because everyone else came in to slog afterwards. It didn't. Can I just say, I don't think enough, one day I will interview him about this. I've only ever interviewed this man about one thing, and I don't think that interview went very well. So he may not agree to my next interview. But I would love to interview Ramiz Raja about what it was like for him to make 7 off 11 when a leg spinner kid is made 102 off.
Rambo was the captain, wasn't he? I reckon. No, Syed Anwar was.
No, Syed Anwar was the captain. Like, but the bowling attack, right? Mm. It's just worth mentioning this. Juminder Vaas, Kumar Dharmasena, now, I don't know if you guys know, but obviously now a perfumery man.
Yeah.
Sanath Jayasuriya and Murali, right? Even Aravinda could bowl a little bit. That's not a bad bowling attack.
And yeah. I know it's a small ground there. Something runs in this match, if I remember correctly.
94 runs.
Yes.
Holy shit.
So it is purely... Yeah, I've not seen the match. That's what I'm saying. I remember the visuals of the magazine I read when it came out in the magazine. I was blown away by that. So that's why it is just outside my 15, as I mentioned, because...
Also, in whites, wasn't it? Was it in whites?
It was in whites, for sure.
Yes, because it was in whites. It was versus the red ball.
Where he's raising his bat and Anwar is standing next to him. So that's the visual I have. Of him.
I remember when we saw it in Australia, we couldn't work out what was happening because we hadn't seen it much. You know, we'd had colored clothing for almost 20 years by that point, right? And so we knew that occasionally there were tournaments in whites, but there weren't many left. This is almost one of the last tournaments. I think, what year was this?
96.
And is it 98 when Sri Lanka tour England is the last major ODI in whites, I think?
India played one in 96 in England.
Commonwealth Games is in whites as well.
97, Sharjah Cup was in whites, I clearly remember.
Yeah. So there's not much left in whites. So for us, it was like, it was, the whole thing didn't make any sense. And I think it was, Simon O'Donnell was on the comment, I heard I didn't see it live, obviously, because those games weren't shown. I've seen it on YouTube about 83 times since. But Simon O'Donnell was, he had a morning show, and I think it was Simon O'Donnell. It was certainly someone in cricket who was just like, I don't understand any of this story. Like, how does a teenager do what is going on here?
And his record also stands for quite a long time. Like, Corey Anderson breaks it eventually, I think in what, 2014 yeah. or 2015? 2014. So nearly two decades. Yeah, that's what, 18 yeah. years, which is also and
then,
insane. And
then, like, AB took it to another level with a 30 yeah, ball 100.
Course. But Afridi remained that guy, even when he became a really, really good white ball wrist spinner, and that was his USP. People still looked at him as the teenager or supposed teenager who slammed a 37 ball 100. It was
but then
kind
he scored 40 ball 100 brand. Against India also, if I remember correctly. 40, 45 Kanpur. Ball, Kanpur. 45 yeah. ball 100. Yeah. But still,
that's
like,
where Ravi Shastri gave him the boom boom nickname. That's where the moniker kind of is born.
Okay. For me, his best career innings is the Chennai Test Match 100. Like, that was insanity. Because the moment he got out, Pakistan bundled up. So, like, they lost, like, what, five wickets? Was 10 runs or something? And that surface was tough. Was really tough. So, like, again, it was just outside my 15. So, because, again, I said, because I've not seen it. So
I was toying with Jared's brain and forcing him to pick this 100 because I wanted to pick another one. I was like, he'll speak really well to it. He often talks about it in, you know, other pieces and stuff. And I would have had to pick the Afridi 100 if he hadn't. So thank you for opening up that window for me.
Wait a minute. Are you not going to pick a Pakistani?
I am choice? Going to pick a Pakistani, oh, but it's going to be...
Phew!
It's going
Deepak
to
would be, like,
be...
How insulting that you have the first yes. time ever you haven't picked a Pakistani.
No, the last pick is often reserved for that, right? But the thing is that this is a 100 which meant a lot to Pakistan when it was scored. Maybe for other people, the Champions Trophy is not a big deal, but for that at that point for Pakistan, it was a massive deal. Fakhar and Fakhar Zaman. Yeah,
it's
Fakhar Zaman versus yeah. India. All right, well, 2017 Champions Trophy final, India versus Pakistan, the mother of all games. And Fakhar Zaman is out early, but turns out that Jasprit Bumrah has overstepped. Everyone in Pakistan, and well, I was in Canada watching with my buddies, everyone had their hearts in their mouths. He survives, and then he just goes berserk. Ultimately ends up with 114 off 106. He is new to the team. He is not a seasoned professional at this time. He literally played a PSL, had some
match.
Decent returns. Yeah. This was his fourth match.
Wasn't
this
it,
was his first.
Was
his
he
debut
in the
came in the tournament.
Squad?
No, he was not in the original squad. Yeah. He did not play against yeah. India during the yes. league match. And you know why I this was number 12 on my list, just above the Herschel Gibbs 135. And why I rate this innings higher and also kind of felt the Indian team was a little oblivious to the fact that he did the same thing to England also in semifinals. So he started, like, the opening partnership did well in against England also in semifinals. And India overlooked that because I clearly remember India won the toss and Kumble at that time's coach was more in the favor of India batting first, but like captain was pretty much adamant that he wants to chase, and I have not seen Indian spin attack in a big final getting so helpless because the way he was hitting Jadeja yeah. and Ashwin kind of killed their ODI careers. Like after that, yeah. after that, like they never paired up together again ever. So like
then India moved. Kulcha. They moved towards Kulcha after yes. that, right? Kuldeep and Chahal partnership. And that was my memory of this knock as well. Sure, you know, he survives Bumrah and then slowly starts to get going. But the minute he starts to take down both of Ashwin and Jadeja, that is where Pakistan fans probably started to, you know, they started to pinch themselves because no one expected Pakistan to even be in this tournament to begin with. They were eighth ranked. They didn't play West Indies or Zimbabwe purposely prior to the Champions Trophy so that they could play in the Champions Trophy. And then they
and
start
that first
off,
game against India. They were, go and have a look at... Yes. Go and find my match report on that. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever been more harsh on a cricket team in my
life.
And
you know, even Ramiz Raza said...
I all but wrote, you might as well go home.
When, like the last wicket fell, Ramiz Raza said, this is not even a rivalry. The gulf between the two sides is unimaginable. Mm. I clearly remember he said that on TV. And
I mean, they couldn't field battle bowl in that game. It is, if you ever, I don't know if there's any way of finding that game. The ICC's probably never put it online, but it is one of the worst games of cricket I've ever seen a major team play.
And to be
honest, I was just like,
and Mohammad,
I was just like, this is disgusting.
Was bowling brilliantly, and still, Rohit somehow survived, scored 90, and then India just the way Imad was taken down by Hardik Pandya in that match, and even the symbolic thing for me was Shoaib Malik's run out. By Jadeja, like Shoaib was halfway down the track. Like It was as if they were all over the place. And then this guy, who was just fourth match old, takes down India. And again, as I said, 100, which traumatized me for years because I was like, this is one trophy that we almost have one hand on it. So yeah, it was number 12 for me.
And I didn't have it on my list.
Interesting.
But I am a big fan of the semifinal final as a double because that semifinal innings was basically all the England was like, this pitch is impossible. No one will be able to make any runs
on it. Exactly. That's what I said.
50 odd, yeah, and just goes, what are you guys talking about?
This is where I think India overlooked that semifinals, which I feel because openers for Pakistan scored 100 plus partnership even in that match also, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Azhar Ali did well.
Azhar Ali
it's
did
interesting.
Well.
Usually we have, tournament finals in England at Lord's, but this one was at the Oval. And Pakistan generally have done really well at the Oval. It's one of those happy hunting grounds for them, away from home. And, despite the fact that after losing or getting butchered by India in the first game, they go on this little run. Rain helps them versus South Africa, but they probably would have won that game. The Sri Lanka game is an absolute thriller and Sarfaraz gets dropped, right? That's how they eventually chase that down, Sarfaraz and Mohammad Amir. And the England game, as you mentioned, like the Cardiff surface and then Pakistan coming in completely annihilating England in the chase. Even
and
after
that was a good England.
That was the England, they
should have won that tournament. They were the best team in that tournament. And then they won the next World Cup.
Despite Pakistan having all of that momentum,
I have my reservations on that final. I personally
feel
that India was slightly better than England in that tournament because England...
England were playing a completely different sport to India. No, they'd already got to the point where they were scoring at over a run of ball in the middle overs by that stage. India was still plinking and plonking the ball around like nerds.
I personally feel like, Jared, because Plunkett kind of started ruling those middle overs post that. Because like if...
Oh yeah, their batting was on a different level to every other team.
Plunkett then became the best middle over bowler in the world at that time because I clearly remember... who was that guy? The pacer with the very weird celebration from Pakistan. Hasan Ali.
Oh my God. I don't know why we're talking about Hasan Ali in a great hundreds
thing.
I don't know
forgot his name. So Hasan Ali for a period of time in 2017-18 ruled the middle overs. Yeah. Another one was Hardik Pandya for that matter. Like he also became a pretty good ODI bowler. And then Plunkett took it to a completely different level. So this is why in 17 I felt India was a little better because they had a more all-round bowling attack. As compared to England?
It's funny you mentioned Hasan Ali because this is Hasan Ali's tournament, right? The Champions Trophy. Yes, his middle overs mayhem that helps Pakistan win. But that fucker 100 is symbolic in a sense that you've got India up in front of you. And despite Pakistan having the momentum, going on a run, beating good teams on their way, right? The England team was, as Jared said, if not the best, then perhaps the second best. And that's, I guess that's subjective to a certain extent.
They beat the best two teams to win the tournament.
Yeah, exactly. It depends on what you value more. But I'm just telling you from a Pakistan perspective, no one felt uber confident going into that final. They were like, oh yeah, well, it was a fun run, right? Hopefully they can do something, but we highly doubt it. And then when starts to get going, everyone starts to believe then. And even once Pakistan post what? 337? 338. That's when everyone's like, okay, you know what? Yeah. People are thinking India are a great chasing team, but this is a lot of runs in a final. And Mohammad Amir's
spell in that match is one of the best spells I've seen with the new ball on a flat deck. I don't know how he managed to move the ball on that surface. I'm still not able to understand it because he did manage to move the ball on that surface, even though that happened for a couple of overs only. But it was such a flat deck and still he was able to get that seam movement off that surface. So I have no... I've not been able to kind of wrap my head around even today because it was such an outlier thing. As I mentioned, it's been on my list. So it was number 12. So I go last.
And the Gulf, the Gulf was such that here's a team that shouldn't have been in the Champions Trophy, right? Like the eighth rank, they're terrible in ODI cricket. And it's one of those freak stories like Leicester winning the Premier League. Obviously not to the same extent because Leicester had to win 38 games or win the entire league after playing 38 games.
Also, it's the Champions Trophy.
Yeah, it is the Champions Trophy and you have to not win a lot of games to win that tournament. But for a moment in between over there...
Champions Trophy or the other one where Australia didn't even try. They just refused to try in one of the Champions Trophies. Yeah. It's the wrong time of year. We don't want to play
it. Australia didn't
try. Yeah, that was 2000. That was the one before. Yeah. Where it's just like,
in this also, involved. I think they got affected by rain, I think, in which Stokes played well.
Something
or was
like
that in
2013? Yeah, but Pakistan's white ball cricket, or at least ODI cricket, was in shambles. And this kind of gives them a bit of a spark. They ruined the spark, but for a couple of years, or maybe 3-4 years in between, then they're good. And Fakhar's 100 has a lot to do with that.
Yes. So, I go last. So, this is the 15th pick
yes.
now?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a little confused between two innings. One which has shaped my childhood. Sachin's 141, that Desert Storm. Knock. Mm. Because nobody gave us the chance. I slept on that day at 143 for something like 29 overs. I didn't expect India to do well in that match. And when I got up in the morning and I got to see the scoreboard, I still regret it to the day that why did I sleep on that day? Why didn't I just watch the whole game? So considering scoring those runs at that pace was unheard of in that era. And Australia.
Is this your pick or are you just talking through your picks?
I don't know. I'm just saying
that. I think it is
his
pick.
It is my pick, yes. So,
other one,
yeah, this is my pick. Because other one was Virat's 133 in Hobart, because again, that was also, for me, was massive.
I would have gone Desert Storm as well. I had Desert Storm on my list, by the way.
Yeah, so these two innings, I was a little confused because Virat, as I mentioned, I watched the Sydney game just before this from the stadium, and India was pretty horrible in that. And when we went to New Zealand, we were in the hotel at that time when this Hobart innings happened. So, but Desert Storm, I think it was just, because I clearly remember India needed 33 runs or something in last three overs when Sachin started bashing Fleming. And I clearly remember Ravi Shastri saying in commentary, he's not going for the qualification for the finals. He's going for the win. This is what the champions are made up of. Like, the tough champions are made up of. And then he got out on a no ball, I guess. Like, he was hooking the ball. And he walked. The umpire didn't even give him out. So, that innings for me was something which was... And Australia had a decent attack. They had Fleming. They had Vaughan. They had Seabaugh. It was pretty decent attack. No, McGrath was missing. But apart from him, like, everybody else was playing in that match. And pretty solid Australian side. And 285 they were. And then that Desert Storm thing kind of corrected the score further. So they had to chase down 276 in 46 overs, if I remember correctly. So
No, that's fair. I think it's a good pick. I had Desert Storm. I just didn't know where to place it. Because obviously, you know, we by default start mentioning a lot of those finals and semi-finals knocks, right? Whereas this is what? A Coca-Cola Cup, is it?
Yeah.
It's Coca-Cola Cup. So I had three innings, which I was a little confused about. I was confused between Chris Kane's 102 in Nairobi 2000 Champions Trophy Finals. Because, again, that match, I felt India was pretty ahead in that match when he came in. And then they had certain collapse also. And he just took that match away from India. This was unbelievable knock in that. Mm. So, these three innings, I was a little confused which one I should pick. Like the Chris Kane one, this Hobart one, and this Desert Storm one. So I think I'll go.
Yeah, I had the Virat one up quite high as well. I've got a couple. There's one that I think should be on this list, but I think the Afridi one probably goes in ahead, which is the Brian Lara 1996 World Cup semi-final.
Yeah, that's South Africa. That's my 15th.
Yeah, they drop Alan Donald and Brian Lara just goes. Sorry,
it was in Karachi, I guess.
Alan Donald for. Yeah, I can't remember where it was. But
I think
they dropped Alan Donald
ball,
for Paul Adams. And he's just like, Brian Lara's like, that's the biggest insult that anyone's ever done to me. I'm going to annihilate you from this tournament from here on in. And that's what he does. And absolutely remarkable.
That's number 15. That's number 15 for me. Just in my 15.
I've got the... Gilchrist in the 07 World Cup
final. I had
that's
that too.
Scotch Bowl game.
That's number 17.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I really didn't know where to place the Gilly knock. And I'm not even a squash ball hater. You know, I like squash balls.
I hate squash. So maybe was that.
So that was number 17 for me. Sachin's Sydney 117 in CB Series final was number 16 for me. Couldn't get into my 15. So the honorary mention. That's Sydney 100.
I think Sachin's the first double 100 from in men's cricket is a pretty big deal, isn't it? And I feel it's quite interesting that we haven't gone with a lot of the double 100s here. Martin Crowe versus Pakistan and Martin Crowe versus Australia in the 92 World Cup was the ones that I was talking about before. Just extraordinary innings as well. Chamari Adepatsu, when she makes 178 against the Australian women.
True.
is a ridiculous one. Rohit's 264. Martin Guptill's first double
in my 15. That was number 14 for me.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah.
That's the Martin Guptill one in my top 15.
I've got the Belinda Clark double 100 here because it's the first double century in limited overs cricket.
It was 97?
And it's like really early on. Also, I think she barely hits a boundary. She runs like almost the entire innings. And she's a very important. And that was, again, that was an innings that we've almost seen no footage of. I don't even know how much footage is available from that game. And yet we still are talking about it, you know, all these years later. And the last one that I had on my long list, which neither of you will have, is the John Davison 100.
Ooh, Canada.
Versus the West Indies. Yeah.
Of course I'll have it.
2003 World
Cup. My countrymen.
Did you have it on the list?
No, I did not.
On your long
I'll claim it.
I think he scored in like 60 balls or something, 50-something balls. For a significant period of time.
It was ridiculous.
It was the fastest 100 in World Cups, I guess. Before Kevin O'Brien broke it.
Kevin O'Brien broke the record. I've got the scorecard here. I can't find it now. I had it. I know. Here it is. And he did it, what, two or three times in that tournament, Bayram, where he just went absolutely ballistic. Mm. So West Indies, I think West Indies sent them in, but I don't remember now. The other opening batter made 16 off 34, right? And John Davison made 111 off 76 balls. And when the other opening batter went out, they were 96 for one. And what did I say he made? 16. And if you watched it, it was some of the best hitting.
I've seen that live.
And of course, the great story with this is...
I've seen that match live.
I saw it live as well. And I was a big Victorian cricket fan. He was the backup off spinner for the Victorian team. And they basically would play him as a fielder, right? And I'd never seen him bat like more than like 10 or 20 balls before. And we were so onside. And I remember... when he made that first innings, when he smashed everyone, right? Was it against New Zealand or Sri Lanka? I can't remember whoever it was. When he first went nuts in that tournament, I remember we were just like, "This can't be the same John Davison." And it was at the burst. It was at the beginning, of course, of that sort of where Cricinfo had. I mean, you know, was pretty much on top of the. You know, well, obviously it was the biggest website, but it was at that point where you would go to Cricinfo. And when we looked it up, we were like, it's the same John Davison. Like, I remember sitting next to him in the MCG when he was 12th man one day, when he was waiting to go out and run drinks. So I knew what he looked like, right? I was like the one of four people in the world that knew what John Davison looked like. And it was so bizarre. And he just had this, I think it was, there we go, 75 versus New Zealand, which I think he also went absolutely ballistic in that innings as well. And again, we talk about the Kevin O'Brien one, but the John Davison one was perhaps the first time we had had something like that. The one other innings I had, which I didn't know where to rate, but the Neil Johnson 100 against Australia in the 99 World Cup. Yeah. He never really got them close, but it wasn't his fault. And he gets exhausted during that innings because he's done all the bowling and now he's doing all the batting.
I was preparing my list yesterday. That 100 crossed my mind, so... The Kevin O'Brien...
Doesn't he smash Warne?
Yes.
Doesn't he smash Warne in that one, Neil Johnson? I'm pretty sure.
I remember that he won one match against South Africa, scored 70-odd, and then took three or four wickets, and he was playing all his cricket in South Africa for all these years. So, I clearly remember this 100 against Australia, but like Zimbabwe lost by a huge margin. I don't remember like whom he had hit, but Kevin O'Brien 100 was completely off my mind. So, I completely skipped that. So, when I was... when you were discussing about Kevin O'Brien 100 also, this Neil Johnson 100 was running in my back and at the back of my head. So even at that time,
okay. So Neil Johnson, so they're chasing 303. Mark Waugh's made an incredible 100. The game's pretty much out of reach. And Neil Johnson on his own scores 132 not out.
Yes, I remember
against
that score.
This bowling lineup. Glenn McGrath, Damien Fleming, Shane Warne, Paul Rifle, Tom Moody, Michael Bevan. So a pretty good... Yeah. A bowling lineup. There's no loose bowlers in there.
People often remember the 1999 ODI World Cup for Lance Klusener, but Neil Johnson was another
massive,
had
major
incredible
player.
Series. Right?
Yeah,
can I read you Shane Warne's figures though?
Yeah. Sure.
Going up against Zimbabwe, he ended up with he didn't even bowl out his full 10 overs. He bowled 9 overs, 1 for 55, and I'm pretty sure I'm right in remembering that the reason they didn't bowl him out is because Neil Johnson was still there.
He batted throughout the innings. So he
yeah. And so there was no point. They couldn't bring Warne back on because they were terrified that he might hit him for 15 or 20 run over.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous. Any others, Bayram, that you have?
You guys have mentioned a lot. Of course, Deepak has picked the Desert Storm one. I had that on my list. The Kohli century versus Sri Lanka in Australia. Do you guys remember that one? Where he just goes berserk?
We both mentioned it.
That's the whole part.
Oh, so that was the 100 you're talking about. Okay. There's that done. I don't know where you guys would rank Smudger's 100 in Sydney versus India in the 2015 ODI World Cup semifinal. He scores 105 of 93.
Again, as I said, like I was not giving India much of a chance once they had lost the toss. So
really?
I didn't feel like India would be able to chase that anything
India
on that.
India were unbeaten up until that point. Like, I thought Australia that they had a solid shot. Pakistan almost knocked Australia out in the quarters, right? Like, so I thought that they could lose.
But they had an insane bowling attack. Like, Mitchell Stark was bowling. I think he was insane at that level. Mitchell Johnson was bowling well. I didn't give India much of a chance in that match. The best India could have done if they would have batted first in that match, for me.
Well, I suppose that's a theme. But Steve Smith at that time, you know, I was still slightly unsure of because I remembered him back from when he was a supposed wrist spinner. And I'd seen him do well already. But I was like, is this that guy? And after that knock, I was like, surely, you know, this is him. So for me, it was quite a major 100 for Smith in his particular, you know, in his personal career.
Why I've not been able to rate the innings that high? Because he bashed India enough. Because he scored more than 700 runs against them in the Test series. And scored like, 400? And he was scoring runs for fun against that Indian attack. So, like, maybe because of that.
That's also true. He had broken onto the scene in Test cricket. So, it was surely inevitable that he'd do something in this ODI World Cup.
And he liked that Indian attack, to be honest. He was just scoring runs for fun against them. So,
Just like I didn't know where to place the Gilly 100 in the 2007 ODI World Cup final versus Sri Lanka, I wasn't sure about AB's 100 either, you know, the one that comes off 31 balls. I was like, where do I place this? This has been happening a lot now. Like, when he scores that 100, it was broken like twice already. So, we were kind of there.
It's still an incredible innings, but I didn't have it all that high either.
I didn't know what to do with it. One really hipster knock that no one would remember is Abdul Razak versus South Africa. It was the second ODI in Abu Dhabi. South Africa had scored, 286 runs in the first innings. Pakistan 2006? Were dwindling. This 2006? Is 2010. And Pakistan were in no way, shape, or form in a winning position. And Razak comes out and slams an unbeaten 109 of 72.
I remember this. Yeah.
It's one of those streets won't forget hundreds. And I watched it in a subway, not the train subway.
Oh, I'm not able to
in an actual, you know, franchised, you know, restaurant sort of subway. And yeah, that's where I watched it with my friends after a concert and we just went crazy.
So where would you play Sachin's 170 not out in Sydney? Like, that was also in my list. Just outside my list. Not in
I
my
had it
15.
On my list, but I had a lot of, you know.
So it was not in my top 15?
I had a lot.
It was not in my top 15. That was number 16th for me. Just after the Lara 100 against South Africa in 96, Karachi, the 111. So the Sachin 100 was number 16 for me, 117 not out versus Australia in Sydney. Because Mitchell Johnson, they had Brett Lee, James Hopes, I think. And considering the fact that
there's another 100 that Sachin scored versus Australia. Late career 100 in India where he scores 175 and fails to win the game for India. But that was a class knock.
That was a class knock. Again, because Hyderabad it was. India was chasing 350. Mm. And he went berserk in that. So, yes, even that. But that 100 didn't feature my top 20 because one of the best Sachin knocks, no doubt about it, but not against a very good Australian bowling attack. So, and also Hyderabad wicket was a belter. So that's why I rated the Sydney 100 higher because for me, like, it was, he had never scored 100 in Australia before that. So it was his first and only 100 in Australia. So in ODIs. So, and also against Australia in a finals, because outside of ICC victories, I rate this series victory as the biggest ODI victory for India.
The CB series,
because it was not easy to defeat that Australian side. Mm. Even the Sri Lankan side that played in that tournament was pretty good.
So, all right.
Can I give you one, the final innings that I had, which is not an ODI, but probably should have been an ODI?
Mm-hmm.
Which is in the year 2000 when the Asia 11 played the rest of the world 11.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Asia make 320 and the rest of the world fall to, what are they, about 134-4 when Chris Cairns goes out. And they end up losing by a run, the rest of the world. But Michael Bevan bats at number 4 in that game and makes 185 of 132
yes,
balls.
I remember
against
game.
Wazim Akram, Chiminda Vaz, Abdul Razak, Anil Kumble, Sachin and Murali.
Wow.
It is one of the most incredible. And like, he never did anything like this for Australia. I never. Don't think he even scores over like 105 for Australia. And he makes this incredible. And there's also a Sean Pollock one. Doesn't Sean Pollock in one of those games make have an incredible innings? But they're not considered ODIs, even though, as I just said, that is an ODI. And it would have been one of the greatest ODI innings of all time. And instead, it's not actually categorized as that. But it was just, it was something that I remembered when I was looking everything up. Yes. But I Bayram, you don't even remember that game.
I've seen that match.
Yeah,
I have watched a lot of those games, though, because when I was growing up, we'd have a fair few of them. But 2000 would be a touch too early for me. I started watching around 02, 03 is where I kind of get hooked onto the sport. But anyway.
It's actually, do you know what? I know you want to finish, but I just want to talk about the team. The rest of the world 11 is Neil Johnson, Jux Callis, Chris Cairns, Lance Klusner. It has like the most ridiculous all-round.
Is Gautam Gambhir coaching this team?
It's just they just picked all the all-rounders. It was so weird. Anyway,
Gautam Gambhir was playing school cricket at that time.
Yeah. Wait, how many lefties and righties are in there? We need to come up with this theory, right?
I'll look it up for you later. But yeah, it's a really funny one.
Yeah. Anyway, you tell us our picks then, Jared, and everyone else.
All right. My picks are Glenn Maxwell, Harmanpreet Kaur, Viv Richards, Kevin O'Brien, Shahid Afridi. Bayram is gone, Herschel Gibbs, Travis Head, Clive Lloyd, Ricky Ponting, Fakhar Zaman. And Deepak has gone Kapil Dev, Aravinda De Silva, Steve Waugh, Saeed Anwar, and Sachin Tendulkar.
I think we did all right. These are pretty good hundreds. I think the only
All right until the commenters come on.
Yes, of course. But I think the only mistake of for you guys is that I went Herschel Gibbs up front, whereas I still feel that chasing down 439 is something. But anyway, let us know in the comments section below how you think we fared, which hundreds we missed, because I'm sure that we mustn't have covered all of them. And also let us know what your 5 would have been. And pick a top 5 of what didn't get picked here. That's a task for you guys for the comments. And that's all for this episode of the Quick Picks podcast. Good debut for Deepak, and we'll be back next week.
An annoyingly good debut, I would say.
Yeah, I was kind
but
of
maybe
hoping
he can never live up to this again.
More. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he can never live up to
this. Maybe this was beginner's luck and it all goes downhill from here. We'll only find out.
This is something which I've lived in my head multiple times, these ODI 100s. So that's why it's so like, maybe the half an hour yesterday, but years and years of thinking over this. Yeah.
Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed. Go like, share and subscribe. Follow Combox everywhere. And we shall see you soon enough on another show. Till then, have a good one. Take care and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Ruckshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make any content, Minvo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minvo.pro now.